Welcome to the Sea Trade Maritime Podcast. I'm your host this episode, Gary Howard, and today I'm speaking with Sebastian Simon from Liebherr Cranes about harbour cranes. We'll discuss their history, the current state of the technology, and where Sebastian sees the technology developing in the coming years. Firstly, I ask Simon to introduce himself. So Sebastian, welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Liebherr?
Yes, thank you. My name is Sebastian. I work for Liebherr since 8 years now in the product management. I started as an assistant for reach stackers and mobile harbor cranes, and now I mainly in charge of the mobile harbor cranes. I was born in Rostock, so I'm glad to work here. I have my family here, and actually the location where we are now with the plant, I was able to see from my flat when I was a child, because I grew up 2 kilometers away from here. So I was able to see the location where we are now from my window in former times. So I have a very close connection here to the city and also now to Liebherr.
That's a great career path and homecoming story. Do you think it's worth us clarifying what a harbour crane is, their sort of main design features, how they're different to the other cranes in a port, and the sort of the role that they play?
Mobile harbour cranes are known and appreciated for their flexibility. So with a mobile harbour crane, it's possible to serve different applications like bulk handling, container handling, and also transport heavy goods or load or unload heavy goods. It's extremely efficient, and with a rubber-tired undercarriage, we have a lot of flexibilities, and the customer don't need to prepare the key side that much, compare it to a portal crane, for instance. And also there is the possibility for the customer to have the opportunity to resell the crane in case you don't need it anymore. So there is flexibility in many, many ways we provide to the market with a mobile harbor crane. It's absolutely versatile. So some years ago, I had a look, what are our mobile harbor cranes actually doing? And it was split equally between container and bulk handling. And there was a third part, of course, then general cargo, but it's not the big part compared to container handling or bulk handling. So I would say the main applications are bulk handling and container handling, but it's also possible to do even general cargo and also scrap. Scrap is also a application which the mobile harbor crane can be used for.
And are there specific vessel types and cargo types that it's used for, or is it very versatile in the things you can it can adapt to?
Yeah, so with the mobile harbor crane, our customers are able to serve the different demands, and I think in nearly every field, in container handling, bulk handling, and also doing heavy goods. And I think there are nearly no limitations, so even scrap handling is possible with the mobile harbor crane. And according to statistics, the mobile harbor crane is mostly or most of the time used for container and bulk handling. These are the main application. And what is also important is, when it comes back to flexibility, that the quayside doesn't need to be prepared. We have a very good load distribution due to our mobile undercarriage. We don't need the rail infrastructure or something like that. And also for our customers, there is the chance to resell the crane just in case you don't need it anymore. So because or due to its flexibility. So I think flexibility is here the big advantage of the mobile harbor crane itself.
Obviously, Liebherr is a well-known name in port equipment industry, but where did it all start for the company, and sort of how did that first mobile harbor crane come around? I think it was in the 1970s.
Yeah, for the mobile harbor cranes, that's correct. But where do I start? Because Liebherr has a very, very long history. So it starts everything with tower cranes in the late 40s. And then we have to understand when it comes or why it comes to mobile harbor cranes. That's why I would like to tell you a bit about the whole story of Liebherr. So as I said, at the end of the 40s, it started with tower cranes because there were big rebuilding programs after the war, so tower cranes were needed. And also during the time, Liebherr started also to build maritime cranes then in the 70s, and also mobile cranes. So then we had the experience of cranes itself, from tower cranes with mobile cranes and maritime cranes. And the idea of the mobile harbor crane wasn't new. So Liebherr did not invent the mobile harbor crane, but they entered the market because it was a very big demand in flexible devices. So and that's why in the 70s, Leica started with the production, with the development of Leica mobile harbor cranes. And of course, you could also do the job which mobile harbor crane do with the normal mobile crane, but there is a big difference in a mobile crane and a mobile harbor crane. And that's why it was necessary to develop a new kind of device, a mobile harbor crane.
Maybe we'll pick up on that then. So before we move towards the present day, how did those first mobile harbor cranes perform in terms of sort of speed and lifting capacity? And I guess what sort of ships were they dealing with as well? Because that must have changed quite a lot over time. And then maybe in with that, how were customers in the industry, were they happy with it as a product?
Of course, they were happy, but you are absolutely right. The product changed over the decades massively. At the beginning, there were just a few hygienic factors. So there was the demand to have a crane, a mobile crane, which is able to move a container or a bag or some kind of bulk from land to shipside or vice versa. Then there came more demands. The speed increased because the ships were getting bigger. And this is also the development of the mobile harbor cranes. The ships or the cranes mainly developed together with the ships. What was really required by the market was a flexible device, and this is where the mobile harbor crane came into the market and served the market demand.
So then let's start moving forward in time. How did the port equipment industry, and I guess the maritime industry as well, how do they develop in these sort of intervening years, and how did Leica adapt to those changes? What were the sort of major trends that you saw and the challenges that it faced as a company?
Yeah, one trend I mentioned, it is the development of ship sizes. Yeah, where we react with, of course, more feasible cranes, with bigger cranes, which were able to serve the ships. And with the ship sizes came also the demand to crane efficiency. So the crane need more power for more speed. For instance, the first cranes we produced, the first mobile harbor cranes, had half of the speed which we have now. So the speeds doubled within the times. So the demand for efficient and very powerful cranes also raises. And what I can see is the former cranes, they were able to do a job to lift a certain load from one point to another. And now we have much more demands, efficiency, capacity, size, outreach. And this is something which was developed during the decades to a point where we are now also some other factors like telematics, automation, which is really new. And there was a long story, it's about four to five decades of crane development. And now we have a very efficient and very powerful crane we can serve to the market.
Perfect time then to talk about some of the features that have been implemented over the years then as these market demands have changed. Yeah, how the design and features of the mobile harbor cranes have developed over time.
Maybe we start with the obvious design changes we face in the past. So in the 70s, we had cranes with an angular tower design, and they were angular because it was necessary to fold down the tower. And I was wondering why it was necessary to lay up the tower. And the answer is, in former times, the cranes were used as a backup for STS cranes. So the workers fold the tower, drive it under the STS, and then build up the tower again, and then work in between the STS legs. So this was one of the main features of the mobile harbor cranes, but this is not necessary anymore. So it then was possible for us to design a round tower, which has more technical advantages, like a better force flow, and therefore also more or a better reliability. Well, of course, the undercarriage design changed massively. In the past, we had a mechanically steered undercarriage with a big turning radius, which was okay. So the crane, it was a mobile crane, but not that flexible. And I think at the end of the 90s, we introduced the new undercarriage design, which could turn on spot because the wheel sets could be steered independently. And this was a big feature. And it was introduced into the market, and the customer said, yeah, we want that, we like that. And this is a very great feature for us till today. And of course, the crane size I think it's obvious. When you have a bigger container ship to serve, the cranes must grow with the container ship. So the towers are getting higher, the booms are getting longer. And this is so the main, the much obvious design features we changed over the years.
We've touched on the evolution of ships getting larger. Perhaps let's just zero in on container ships in particular and how they've grown in size and capacity over the past decades. Could you give us some information perhaps on the growth of those ships and how that's impacted the port equipment side of things?
Yeah, when you look at the statistics, in the 70s, there was a specific average toy. So all the ships were, in average, together, I think they had 1,500 TEU. And today, I think they're, in average, factor 3 times bigger. And when we look at the maximum ship size, it's factor 10, because now we have ships with over 20,000 TEU. And of course, usually, when you have a ship like that, it's usually loaded or unloaded with an STS. But as I said, a mobile hyper crane is also used for a backup for an STS, so the crane must be able to serve also those kind of ships. And this is what we are able to do with our biggest crane, with our LHM-800. It's the biggest in the market. Usually mobile harbor cranes can serve ships up to 21 container rows, and now with the LHM-800 we extend that again to up to 22, 23 container rows depending on the condition on the quayside.
And as far as the Liebe product line goes, you've got cranes ranging from, I think, a 64-ton capacity right up through over 300 tons. Where is the split of the demand across that range? I mean, I'm looking here at, what is it, 6 or 7 different crane sizes. How does the market demand spread across those different sizes?
This is a very interesting development we see here. So in the past, it was equally distributed between the LHM 550, 420, 280. And what we see now is that the smaller cranes are not that demanded anymore, like the LHM 120 or 280. And the focus shifted more to the bigger cranes, like the 550 and 600. So I would say these are our main products at the moment. And also the LHM 800, which is extremely unique in the market. So there is no other mobile harbor crane in the market which can lift 300 tons. This is also I would say one of our most successful developments during the last decades, because we raise also the flexibility again. It's usually used in base ports for offshore handling to lift all the heavy offshore components, and can be also used then for some smaller general cargo or even container handling. And this is why the customers buying those kind of products, and especially the LHM 800. The focus changed from the smaller cranes to the bigger cranes, and the smaller cranes, we will see the shift even more in the future, that even less of the cranes in the size of the LHM 120 or 280 will be used in the market, but even more than the 550 and 600s.
Is there a particular geographical split between where the demand is for various crane sizes, or is it all quite distributed globally?
I would say it's well distributed. What I can say is that Europe is our core market for mobile harbor cranes still. So most of the cranes are sold in Europe, and then it's very well distributed outside Europe. So some years we have a very strong market in Asia, and then again in North America. So it changed from year to year. So in outside Europe, it's not that a continuous business, but due to the global economics, we have a continuous business in the area outside Europe, to say it like that.
We've covered sort of from the late 1940s through to the present day. Why don't we take a little look ahead? What do you think is the future of the port equipment industry in the maritime sector, and where do you see developments on those mobile harbor cranes evolving, say, over the next decade?
So what we see is that the development of ship size is not that fast anymore as it was before. So I don't think that we will see much bigger cranes in the future, but I think the inner values of the crane, they will change massively. This is also something we saw in the 90s, where the complete hydraulic system was overhauled to meet the efficiency demand. We saw in the early 90s the implementation of telematic systems, and this is why we think digitalization itself, it will be a big factor in the future. Sensor data, automation, And also, we are also driven by regulations. Every time when a new regulation, for instance, for exhaust emission came up in the market, we have to react. We have to serve also these demands. And then we come to a point when we have to find solutions for that, like e-drives. E-drives is something we offer itself since, I think, a quarter century, since 25 years. But now we see a very a boost in those drive technology. The sales numbers of cranes with e-drive has tripled within the last 5 years. And that's why I can see, there's a trend. So the cranes of the future, they will be much more electrified. And we have the technology, but we have to spend more focus on that to get it even more efficient.
So we've seen globally a move in a lot of ports towards getting as close as they can to zero emissions operation. Are you seeing a demand for electronic drive, for instance, in your cranes to help reduce those operational emissions?
Yeah, so our cranes are today able to serve the stage one in the greenhouse gas protocol, so the emission-free drive, so it's possible. So, and it then depends, of course, where the energy for this comes from, but this is not in our hand. But the e-drive itself, it's a technology we deliver since 25 years. And I think the next step will also be the further electrification, because now we have electro-hydraulic cranes and we see also the demand for pure electric cranes. We did the first step in 2019 where we released the pure electric LPS 420E. It's the portal crane based on the mobile harbor crane. So we took the upper part of the mobile harbor crane, put it on the portal, and this crane doesn't have hydraulics anymore inside the crane.
What are the benefits then of getting rid of the hydraulic systems?
We can see it from more than one side. So I would say the hydraulic itself is an extreme powerful technology. We have a high energy density, and therefore we can move a lot of heavy things very quick with very small components. On the other hand, and to be honest, pure electric cranes, so when they have really no hydraulic on board anymore, which we see in the LPS 420E, there's the opportunity to save some service costs, some OPEX, because you don't have to change the filters, etc. You don't have to change the oil. But I think when we do the steps, then we do it right, and then we completely eliminate the hydraulic oil and doing not some kind of hybrid with some hydraulic oil.
We've seen in other areas of crane technology the introduction of remote operations for cranes. Is that something that's likely or being considered for mobile harbor cranes as well?
I can say we think about that. So there are also customer requests in this regard. And I think it's a very good idea. It's a very good opportunity to even raise the efficiency of these cranes. But I have to say it's much more difficult compared to an STS crane, for instance. For an STS crane, it's some kind of standard to have a remote operating desk, because the degrees of freedom much fewer compared to a mobile harbor crane, where you have slewing, where you have hoisting, where you have luffing, where I have more complex movements and swinging loads. So the remote operation, or to integrate the remote operation, will be more complex compared to an STS, but the idea is worth to follow, I would say.
Thank you for listening to the SeaTrade Maritime Podcast.